Welcome to the show. It's Scott and Nathan here to bring you an episode on Total War. Again. And again. And this is the third time we've recorded this. And if you're hearing it, we've been successful. Otherwise, I'm very sorry. Because you're never going to hear it. Because this episode is deeply cursed. Before we get started today, it bears mentioning that Scott and I recorded a segment on Total War a few weeks ago, and my microphone went on the fritz, and that episode was unusable. It worked out, though, because that episode would have come out about a week before the Total War Warhammer 3 trailer dropped, and it would have been almost entirely out of date as soon as you listened to it. We also recorded the episode again, this morning. This very morning. And this time, my computer crashed. Not just the computer, the operating system, everything about this computer just shut down in the middle of downloading the episode, which we had spent 2.5 hours recording. And so here we are, again, to bring you a Wargames Orchard episode all about Total War. If it sounds a little weird, it's only because this is the third time we've recorded it. But we're going to do our best for you and try and pretend like those unfortunate circumstances never happened. So we're going to start things off with a little bit of hobby talk. And Scott, why don't you start us off with this one?
Great. I'd like the third go because I only mentioned one hobby project last time. So I focused on my high elves, so I can actually, expand upon that a little bit. So I started collecting the high elves a while ago. The story, I may have said it on another episode. My partner, Gina, had collected high elves when we first kind of met, and she saw me playing Warhammer, and she loved the models and minis, and she's like, oh, I want to try these high elves. So we collected a high elf army, and then years later, she wanted to sell them. And of course, being me, I'm like, oh, could you not do that? And she insisted on selling them. I didn't have the money at the time. It was a massive army. I think she ended up getting like $500 for it all. So I vowed to one day collect that army again. And over the years, I have now collected 7 Island of Blood boxes.
That was still the craziest thing to come out of those episodes, the What's in the Box episodes, was learning that you got 7 Island of Bloods.
I forgot. That's where I mentioned it, because I talk about it a lot. And some people are like, how come you're not painting that? How come you're not? And I just had a lot of other projects. And to be honest, I cannot paint or start painting an army until I feel confident that I'm ready to get the color scheme I want. So last night I worked on the color scheme on the Dragon Princes. I set it down. I looked at it again today, and I'm pretty sure I'm happy with the result. And that was just, I sent you a picture. That's just a result of base coat shade. Now going up from that, I'm super excited. And I was inspired by a picture. If you look at the 8th edition High Elf Army book, open up to the bestiary section, look at the Dragon Princes. There's a pick there, and they're literally 2 colors, blue and green, a dark blue and a green. And that's kind of where I got the inspiration from. My blue is a little lighter, but I'm going to shade that up. The idea to me was like, oh yeah, that's kind of the color of a dragon, the blue and greens. That was an inspiration. It's kind of where I wanted to go. I still have tons of work been doing on the Blood Angels. I'm still picking away at the Slaanesh army. My Slaanesh army is ready for the table, but you know, as the painter, you know what's left to do, and it can bug you a bit. So I've been picking away at that. Fantasy's on my mind a lot lately, partly to do with what we have to share with the community in the future. We'll talk about that in a bit. My desk is quite full right now, and I'm pretty excited.
Awesome. For myself in hobby, I've got a few things that I'm picking away at slowly in between re-recording and re-recording episodes. And those are Warhammer Fantasy Orcs for 5th edition. I've actually got a game against Patrick tomorrow that I'm breaking out the orcs with, and that should be a lot of fun. I'm also doing the Tyranids, slowly coming along, one gaunt at a time. And it feels absolutely never ending. Hopefully, I'll be done the 1,500 points or so sometime around when the Tyranid book comes out. in the fall or next winter, whenever that's slated. Finally, I actually decided to make my own Manowar models. Manowar is Games Workshop's long-forgotten naval war game set in the Warhammer Fantasy world. Most of the races in the game had their own fleets at some point, or at least had rules for their own fleets. And these little boats are tons of fun. I really was thinking about it because they're all very small. They're a small scale, around 1 to 300 or 1 to 600. And I thought, how hard could it be to make some of my own out of modeling clay and other craft supplies? And I mean, I certainly made things. I don't know how great they are. By the time you're hearing this, the picture should be up. Yeah, on the Warhammer Orchard Facebook page and probably on the Manowar page on Facebook. Yeah, they're certainly unique. I will give myself that much. I've had some fun doing it. It's always kind of fun to play around with arts and crafts supplies.
Absolutely.
But I think my reach may have exceeded my grasp on these ones. I think they're pretty derpy, to be honest with you.
Aww.
But they're a little lovable. You know, it's just like, oh, boat, yeah, you're doing your best. I've made a couple of what I would consider medium-sized ships for the game. Luckily, though, I'm not going to have to solely rely on my arts and crafts skills to get a Manowar fleet together. I played my first Manowar game the other day with my buddy Josh from the Crown of Command podcast. We played a remote game, and he's got a fairly sizable collection of Manowar, so we played a starter set game, which consists of six pirate ships versus six empire ships. And that was a total blast. It's lots and lots of fun. I can't wait to play again with him and dive into some of the more complex fleets and more flavorful rules that you get as you dive into the game. And he was very kind and has mailed me six Empire war galleys and an Empire great ship, which is the makings of most of an Empire fleet. You don't need a ton of models to play Manowar. And this is hugely generous of him, so a big shout out to Josh. Thank you very much
That's
for awesome. That. I know how much those models go for online. I've been looking. Yeah, it's tremendously generous of him. He's a super, super cool dude. That does it for my hobby news. Now for some more proper news items to share with you guys. I have been speaking with a gentleman from Germany. His name is Marcel. And he is part of our Hero Hammer magazine project. He is a big contributor to that. We got talking about Manowar, but one thing led to another, and we got on the subject of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. And he was looking to start a remote game. And it just so happens that, despite the incredible time differences in our schedule, we think we can make this work. And
Neat.
So I'm going to be playing the fourth edition of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay with Marcel and a couple of other gentlemen who I have yet to meet.
Cool.
One of them is Canadian, though he lives on the other end of the continent, because of course. And I believe another gentleman from Germany. So Marcel and our little group, we're going to play hopefully once or twice a month. It's not a huge commitment for any of us, but it should be lots of fun to dive into Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, something I have not done in a long, long time. And eventually, I want to use it as practice so that at some point in the future, we can bring Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay to the Wargames Orchard on some level. I think there's a lot of opportunity to do some on-air role-playing like that, and it's going to be really exciting. I'm super stoked to make this character. I'm going to do it 100% randomized, like in our Patreon episode, because
that's
it
awesome.
Was just way too much fun.
Yeah.
And I can't make a Warhammer Fantasy roleplay character any other way now. It's just...
That was wild.
It was a incredible episode.
Yeah. If you haven't heard before, we both made characters and we rolled both rolled randomly. We could not have predicted what would happen. Not in a million years. What happened was improbable.
it was somewhat improbable, yeah.
Yeah.
I did not expect anything that was going to work out as well as that did.
Created its own story. It's awesome.
Next up, I just wanted to mention that I'm on a couple of episodes of the Flail of Skulls podcast. This is a podcast that focuses on the Hero Hammer era of Warhammer Fantasy. We've been doing episodes about list building and having kind of a rotating cast where everyone brings a list and then we discuss the lists and pull them apart and see if we can make them better or just more fun or more thematic. I tend to lean into the thematic side of things since I don't have those math hammer skills. And we have a couple of episodes that should be coming out soon. The first one on Dark Elves. This episode includes me losing my absolute mind. I dropped about 60 IQ points just in the recording of this episode. I couldn't make a legal list to save my life, unfortunately. Not only that, but I spent the entire episode talking into an unplugged microphone. Luckily, my Chromebook, my little Chromebook microphone picked me up, and that's how they got my audio. The other guys didn't know that anything was wrong, and I didn't know until after the episode, and I looked down, and I was like, wait, this microphone was never plugged in. And
so,
oh boy.
What you're saying is, make sure if you're going to listen to that episode, have a few drinks before.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have hurt me any, I can tell you that much.
Great.
That was a lot of fun. Even though I couldn't make a list properly, it still ended up as a good episode. We had a lot of fun with it. I did a themed list based on the Cult of Pleasure, so led by Marathi.
That's why. Cult of, also known as Cult of Stupidity.
Yes, seriously. Yeah, strangely enough, though, it didn't take any cold one night, so I don't know how I still got hit.
Yeah, no, that's the problem.
The second episode, which should be coming out after that one, is all about dwarfs. And that was a ton of fun. We did all sorts of silly lists for that one, including one of the guys bringing a dwarf necromancy list. Using the Crown of Sorcery item that makes any character in the game that you give it to a level 3 necromancer.
Oh man, that's so righteous.
And it's a very cool list. I ended up doing a dwarf naval themed list, so the crew of a dwarf ironclad and theming it around that way. We had a classic slayer list, all sorts of things there. If you like Hero Hammer, or if you just want to hear me make a fool out of myself, the Flail of Skulls podcast is your place to go. The dwarf list, a slight spoiler, but the dwarf list, I think, was my first legal list on the show, which is embarrassing.
Not your faction.
Yeah. Every time I end an episode of Flail of Skulls, I just have to remind myself, wait, I do know how to play this game, right? Yeah. I blame it on the fact that I'm always trying to do something new and something different in those lists. But it could be that I am just a little dumb.
I don't think so. I think it's the influence we have on each other where we like count how many games we play. It's crazy.
That's true. That is my other out, that I play too many games.
Like, all I have to do is mention you or me to each other. It's like, I was thinking about this for the Orchard Edition. And then your mind has to go immediately to that game. And if you're not in the right frame of mind for the game, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, I was just thinking about mathing out this for 6th edition, you know, not... It's crazy.
It's a little bit like being multilingual, right? You have to kind of translate it each to Absolutely. Every time you hear something. Oh, okay, what edition am I thinking about here?
Yeah. And for me, I love that. I thrive off that.
The next thing that we wanted to mention today is something a little bit special. In our Year in Review episode, Scott and I mentioned that we wanted to start streaming and that we were working towards that. Well, time has passed and things have moved forward a little bit, and it should be very soon that we can start hosting live streamed games and other live shows, that kind of thing. We have something very fun planned for our first ever stream. We're going to be showing off Warhammer Fantasy Orchard Edition. If this is your first time listening to the show, you don't know what that means. It's basically Warhammer 6th Edition with 8th Edition books. and a few cross rules between the two. It plays very, very well, and we're really proud of it. Scott has put in a ton of work, as well as Jesse and a few other guys, in making this edition work. And you're always thinking about rules changes and various experiments to run for it. So we thought it was only fitting that when we start streaming with the Orchard Edition. We are going to be streaming a variety of games, however. We always intended for the War Games Orchard to be a variety of games, not just Warhammer Fantasy or Warhammer 40K, but a family of games. We're going to be starting with Fantasy, 40K, and Infinity, and then maybe branching out from there in the future.
Right. We'll get people interested. If somebody's interested in a specific game and we get a few people, or, you know, a good number of people mention this, we will definitely answer.
Absolutely. And we're also going to be looking into different editions of the same games. I'm very excited to do some Warhammer Fantasy 5th and some Warhammer 40K 2nd edition, but we're certainly going to be doing the modern 40K. Warhammer Fantasy, I think we might be all over the place. In the Orchard, I know we've got fans of all of the editions in there.
And we're excited to show that off.
And when we go here, we're looking to present to you guys a professional stream. So we're working hand in hand with a great buddy of ours, Raphael. He's our favorite person in the whole world, probably, at this point. And he is Scott's coworker, as well as he does his own streaming stuff. And he's an engineer, is that?
Landed a job with Panasonic, actually. So awesome. He'll be doing some kind of work or programming for them. So
yeah. The moral of the story is Raphael is really good at this kind of thing.
Yeah, and he's also a nerd as well. So
he's helping us set up something that I think we're going to be very proud of, and I think is going to be a very enjoyable experience for you guys.
I forgot, it's exciting for you too, because you're going to be basically our producer. You're going to be running the show. You'll be playing games as well, of course, but talking to people behind the camera, you know, telling us what we're doing wrong. You can commentate for us. There's all kinds of stuff you can do. You have that good voice. So that's...
Oh, thank you. Yeah, as Scott mentions, I will be behind the scenes that first game, and probably more games than I'll be playing, honestly. And that suits me just fine, as I love to watch games. I love to commentate on games. It will allow me also to interact with the audience, with you guys, throughout the game. We can do some fun stuff in chat. During downtime, we might explore the lore of the game a little bit, or the lore of the armies and factions. Cool. What we want to bring to you guys is a interactive experience, and something that is filmed in a professional manner, and something that's going to be, as soon as it launches, if not an entirely finished product, something that is polished and something that won't be just a potato cam stream. We're going to have multiple cameras set up. Everyone's mic'd up. I think it's going to be very, very cool.
There's still that startup thing where we won't know what we're doing right off the hop, but we have that vision anyway. And like you said, Nathan, we're gonna give it our all at first, and look for feedback, of course. Mm-hmm. This is really exciting, because I don't know anybody that live streams fantasy.
I haven't seen any, and not that I am that dialed in, but I think we might be a unique property at this point for doing that. And I really like the idea of live streaming fantasy. I think it's a...
Me too. I mean, you guys are going to hear us geek out. Like,
oh yeah.
Like we're set. We're huge, huge geeks.
It should be a lot of fun. When we do our inaugural stream, we're going to do a little bit of a soft opening. And by that, I mean... The stream will be live for anyone to watch, but we're going to try and invite our Orchard listeners, our friends on Patreon, and everybody who is familiar with us to come hang out with us, help us work out the kinks, and then we will go from there. We'll definitely be letting you know as soon as we get a definite date for that very first stream. I will be putting that absolutely everywhere I can find. So if you are in our sphere at all, you will be seeing those notifications. And yeah, we hope that you will come hang out with us, spend some time watching the games, and give us your input, give us your feedback, and suggestions for what you would like to see played. Because we really want to explore not just Warhammer and Warhammer Fantasy, Infinity, but all sorts of things. The tabletop environment at this point is so rich and colorful. Yeah, there's really so much out there. And like Scott said, we're big nerds. We just want to dive right into it.
Yeah, it's the golden age of nerdery. It mm-hmm. really is. It's like, we're lucky. I mean, of course, the pandemic is awful, but can you imagine if we didn't have Warhammer? Or there'd be distractions, but I don't know. This is the best distraction.
In the beginning, our schedule might be a little bit all over the place, but we do intend to get down to a once a week schedule for games.
Yep.
And then perhaps a live show as well later on in the week. But for now, it's going to be a as it happens kind of experience. Please do check us out and keep an eye open for that. I will not be subtle when we are starting that stream. Ooh. So if you've got any interest in hanging out with us, please do
we
so.
We should mention this, and I forgot on the last two times, we have an interesting time zone, where a lot of the most popular streams are done in the Pacific side, so it's the time is quite wonky. It's worth noting we are in the Atlantic time, so we're kind of right in the middle. If you're in Europe, you could probably catch us. Your time would be probably 8 or 9 or 10 p.m., so potentially can reach a lot of people at the same time.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for that. If we can get our friends in Europe at all, that would be lovely. Mm-hmm. We'll be a little bit late for them, but not beyond the pale. Certainly not like, as bad as a Pacific start time or anything like that.
You could come in and say hello and catch like the first turn or two, or you know, whatever's realistic. If you're me, you're up till 2 a.m. anyway, but yeah.
So keep an eye out for that. That is coming very soon, hopefully. And we will let you know more as it develops. The last thing I want to mention before we dive into our main topic today is our Patreon. The Wargames Orchard Patreon is a non-tiered Patreon, which means that for any donation at all, you get access to all of our bonus content. Our bonus content includes a bonus episode every month, various stories that I record for the Patreon that I can't find space for in an episode, but I love them too much to not record them. And the Patreon, once we start streaming, will also be home to a number of bonus videos. This is an awesome time to get into our Patreon. You can do that for as little as $1 a month. And I like to flatter myself by saying that you get a lot of value for your dollar with the Wargames Orchard Patreon. We have a lot of fun there. Our current episode, as we mentioned earlier, is all about Warhammer Fantasy roleplay. Scott and I made 100% randomized characters. We even randomized the stuff you're not supposed to randomize. And we came out with a couple of gems of characters. It is the legend of Dimzad and Ludo, a very improbable duo. And if you want to listen to that, you can. It's $1 a month or however much you would like to donate. Any amount honestly helps us out and gives us that little feel-good moment that makes doing this episode a third time more worthwhile. And with that, we end my obligatory Patreon plug and we can move on to our main topic. Before we jump into Total War, Scott and I thought it might be fun to discuss our history with Warhammer video games, as Warhammer video games have been around since the early 90s, and it's hard to, as a fan, have avoided playing at least a few of these ones. So we're going to just talk about the ones that made an impact on us, or that we thought maybe were particularly good or particularly bad. Scott, what was your introduction to the Warhammer worlds digitally?
Definitely Shadow of the Horned Rat. The funny part was that I didn't have the patience at the time. I was like, what am I doing? Like, the controls. Oh, I was just so frustrated. So my friend Jared, who he was that person that just had the patience and he could take something that would seem really, really frustrating and make it just work. He just did it. And the best part is you always enjoyed watching him do it because he did it so well. So instead of me playing, I would get a call and Jared would be like, yeah, I got to this part in the game. And I would just run over and watch him play Shadow of the Horned Rat. It was so much more fun for me watching him play it than... And our other friend Devin would be like, did you know Jared got this far in Shadow of the Horned Rat? And we were like... I was kind of jealous because I really didn't have the patience for that. And I'm like, how does this guy work this? And he was showing me, like, he was hammering on the button where it gets your guys going.
Oh, the boost.
The boost button. The boost and I'm button. Like, this is so crazy. And yeah, I had a lot of fun watching it. That was the first Warhammer game. So I feel good about actually having some part of it. Dark Omen was something I liked a lot more. Because, you know, watching my friend play Shadow of the Horned Rat, Dark Omen, I had more of a, you know, you kind of get more excited about it and you're like, going to give this a good college try type thing. Really like that one. But my favorite one for a long time was Warhammer Battle March, which is a fantasy game. You'll see it scored as 63% from like gaming magazines or less. But fans, like true fans of it, they're up in the 90%. It basically plays like Total War, Warhammer, but not in the campaign mode, but just like you and I can be like, cool, let's have a 2000 point game. We can load up the game and you play on your computer, I play on my computer or Xbox, whatever. And you can actually fight each other with the point system, that's Warhammer. So that was really exciting. There was a fun little campaign, not as in-depth, but I really enjoyed that game. And then we have the infamous Dawn of War series. I have all three of them now, but to this day, my favorite one is Dark Crusade, the introduction of Tau and Necrons. Since I'm a Tau player, what a great game to show you how the Tau would play in the way the lore, it follows it. It just feels right. Sending those missiles out, sending the broadsides out. Yeah, so very, very good game. And then we lead into what we know today as Total War Warhammer. Yeah, there's a lot to be said about that as well, which we'll get into.
Mm-hmm. When you were playing Dawn of War as the Tau, do you remember, I think it was their relic unit that was this, it looked like the classic Tau tank design, like the Devilfish or something like that. But it wasn't the Hammerhead and it just created drones. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. The Drone Harbinger.
Man, I remember playing as the Tau with the Drone Harbinger, and I was just like, you don't need any other unit to win the entire campaign. Like, it was just so good, and the drones did so much damage. I remember that.
I love the stealth teams with jetpacks, man. I love those things.
Oh, the way stealth worked in Dawn of War was annoying. Like, it was great when you were doing it, but when it was done to you, you were just like, I hate this. This is so stupid. Yeah.
The actual disappointing part was Dawn of War 2... And of course, 3 is, whatever. But Dawn of War 2 doesn't have the Tau representation that I was... Oh, I would love for them to still, even to this day, I'd like, hey, make a Tau update. You can do that character battle. I can't remember the arena game, but you could be a Tau character. But yeah, I would love to see Tau in Dawn of War 2.
If I had to make a list of the most disappointing Warhammer video games of all time... Dawn of War 2 is my pick. And I'm not saying it's a bad game. I'm saying I was personally disappointed in it.
I understand.
Because all I wanted was Dawn of War 1 with better graphics.
Yeah.
And they completely changed the way the game works. And I get that it's a totally different genre. But for someone like me who I poured time into Dawn of War.
No, I understand.
It was just an absolute, like, what even is this? Where's my base? Where's my... Yeah, I just want to make an army and go fight things. I don't want to have to do this tactical nonsense.
I was lucky and I didn't wait for it. Like, I wasn't into Dawn of War 2. I played Dawn of War 2, like, more recently than ever. But I missed that whole event of it coming out. And it didn't hit me like that. But I would agree with you if I played it at the same time as you did, I would be disappointed.
I'm glad I'm not alone on that one.
Yeah, no.
My history with Warhammer games starts in about 97. Actually, no, 98. Because in 1998, what happened was there was a 4-pack of games that was released. And these games were all released prior to this, but I got them in 98 as this 4-pack. And it was Shadow of the Horned Rat, Dark Omen, Final Liberation, which was based on Epic 40K, and Chaos Gate. These games just completely captured my imagination, each one of them in their own way. What I really gravitated towards, though, was Chaos Gate, which is an incredible little game. It's an XCOM reskin. So if you like the way XCOM plays, you probably like Chaos Gate. And it was Ultramarines versus Wordbearers. Yeah, it was so fun. It was so atmospheric. And it had the best soundtrack of all time. Sure. I love it so much. Nice. Very Gregorian chanting-esque kind of things.
Oh, yeah. No, that sucks me right in. That's,
yeah. Yeah, everything about it was so dark and gothic. I mean, except for the sprites, which were their second edition ultra bright colors, but it worked. And this game has had such an impact on me. To give you an idea of just the way that my 40K career has progressed, I have had about 100 different armies. And I've sold 99% of them over the years.
You know,
I collect them and I got bored and then I'd sell them and then I'd get the itch and then maybe I'd get them again. The two main armies that I have to this very day are a second edition Wordbearers force and a current era Ultramarines force, painted like the beautiful candy coated Ultramarines of yore.
That's how much. You have two different eras, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
And unfortunately, they don't play so well together because scale creep. But otherwise, that's how much this game spoke to me. To this day, I still love those armies. I love the feel of them. Yeah, it was a very profound impact on young Nathan. Really got me into 40K along with a couple of other things. After that, I played pretty much every Warhammer game that came out in that early era, so the 90s and early aughts, because there just wasn't that much coming out at that time. It was pretty easy to keep up. Yep. So I played things like Rites of War. I played Fire Warrior, that beautiful mess that it is.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Right. The one that kind of changed the game was Dawn of War. And we're both huge fans of Dawn of War. Dawn of War did so well. It's the 32nd best-selling computer game of all time. And maybe that doesn't sound super impressive until you realize just how many thousands of computer games there are in the world.
And Warhammer's not mainstream.
And so, Warhammer isn't mainstream, even to this day, where it's far more popular than it was in 2004. Mm-hmm. Dawn of War shipped over 4 million copies in its lifespan. That is including its expansions, but still an incredible number. And it brought so many people into the hobby. I think of it as almost the proto Total War in this case, because we're going to talk about how Total War has influenced the Warhammer fantasy community. And honestly, I believe it's done much of what
Dawn of War
did for 40K. After Dawn of War, we started to get more and more games set in the Warhammer universes. I did play Battle March, like you did.
Yep.
And I don't think I ever got as into it as you, though I did love playing Siege games for some reason in that one. I found those very fun.
Battle March was weird because you had to dig deep in the game to find out its potentials. Like, it was hard to connect sometimes. I don't even know if you could connect it on Xbox. I think it was only PC that you could multiplayer.
Okay.
But for me, everything about whenever I think of a video game, I think, you know, when I search Steam games, I always check the multiplayer option and you lose points right away. You know, like I have my history of video games where I want that solo game by myself. like Final Fantasy VII. I'm going to play this. I'm in it. But if I were to choose any game genre, like it would have to be two player. Like, why isn't there a two player Skyrim? You know what I mean? Like that would be the best.
That would be the best. I kind of fell off of Warhammer gaming after that in a bit of a way, because it just didn't have the novelty that it did in the early days, where Warhammer was a bit more niche and there wasn't many games coming out for it. We started to get more and more games. I did play the 2010 Space Marine from THQ.
Oh, yeah.
That was a fun game. It's simple and it's silly, but it's kind of just a visceral beat-em-up fun to it.
Oh, my God, it's so intense. Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that game. I thought it was fine. The story's pretty fun, too. It's all good. Yeah, and then that kind of brings us to the modern era. Like most things in my life, I have the greatest love and the greatest admiration for that 90s era of Games Workshop games, because that was my introduction, and I still play those games to this day, and I love the fact that I can do that. Graphics don't mean much to me. It's more of, I'm more of a gameplay kind of guy.
You're an adult now.
Yeah. So, So now that we've got our history sorted here, let's kind of move into the meat of our topic, which is Total War Warhammer. And we'll start off by discussing the game's importance to the Warhammer Fantasy community, because I'm not sure that a lot of the great developments that we're seeing nowadays aren't as a direct or even partial influence of the success of Warhammer Total War.
On that point, the release date, we talk about the release date, 2016. So the interesting part of that is that's a year after GW start, you know, the end times. We lost our square bases, AOS was born. And my question to you is, what do you think about the timing of Total War, the release of it? It's very interesting.
Total War seems to me to be a result of Creative Assembly finding their match with Total War and kind of the perfect property for it in Warhammer Fantasy. I don't give Games Workshop a lot of credit for the success of Total War or for it kind of being the one light in the dark space that was being a Warhammer Fantasy fan after the End Times and Age of Sigmar released. I think that the timing of this game is more of a happy accident. I feel like what happened was Games Workshop started realizing that they could license their IP to video game developers to basically make a quick dollar in this era. And they're still doing that to this day. There's a ton of crazy mobile games and things.
Phone apps and stuff. There's actually a Total War phone app.
Of course.
Yeah.
And what happened was Creative Assembly came along, realized the potential of this, and that's how we got it. And I think that it came out in 2016 was the end product of it simply being when the game was finished. Because from a marketing perspective, it wouldn't make any sense at all. This is a property that Games Workshop basically abandoned. They threw it out. And then Creative Assembly comes in and brings us this incredible product only a year afterwards.
In my entire life, going through video games, to me, this is the strangest release date of any game. It just feels so strange. And it wouldn't feel strange to someone that didn't play the tabletop game for over 20 years. It was like, because I mentioned before, my buddy Chris, it was 2016. Chris was like, did you see this game coming out, Total War? And my other friends and I were so disappointed that they actually got rid of fantasy. We didn't even like look at it. I looked at the images and stuff and I said, that's cool, but this is totally the wrong time. And then I'm realizing it's the wrong time for me, where my friend Chris is playing it, because he's neutral with games. He just plays a bunch of different games that we play, but he's been always kind of on the neutral, which was good in this aspect. He wasn't as hurt as we were. But yeah, I wasn't as hurt as some other people. I actually didn't believe that they were going to get rid of it. I thought End Times was going to happen and they would just continue to support the old world in another way. But I was wrong. But for me, Total War was not... That was the strangest thing. And I didn't buy the game until late 2018. It went on sale on Steam. So yeah, interesting. I find that really a topic that I would love to talk to other people about, like people that actually played Total War only. And there is rumors that this is the best Total War ever out of all the Total War. I've heard people say like Total War Warhammer's the best Total War game. So the engine of Total War is fantastic.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. And I'm not enough of a Total War gamer to have a
This is my
educated
one,
opinion, right? So, on it. Yeah, yeah, I've played a couple, but not nearly enough. I have heard that as well. And I think there's three groups that you get when you to make up your base for Total War Warhammer. I think you have those Total War wargamers who love the style of the game and the mechanics of the game. And that's kind of your core audience for any of the Total War games. And then you have us Warhammer Fantasy fans who are just thrilled to see kind of our dream matchup for video games for Warhammer Fantasy. And finally, I think you have the fantasy enthusiast. And I just mean that as in the general genre of fantasy. And I think what we've seen over the last several years is that there is a real market and a real desire for good fantasy nowadays. And fantasy is traditionally an underserved market. At least it has been for the last several decades, as science fiction is just this juggernaut, right? And even things that you wouldn't necessarily think as necessarily science fiction properties have gone very sci-fi. Things like superhero movies always have that those big sci-fi elements. And we found with something like Game of Thrones that was a real phenomena, there is a demand and a desire for good fantasy. And it's unfortunate that, you know, Game of Thrones ended the way it did. Yeah. But forget, though, that we got 6 years of just this huge juggernaut of a property that introduced a lot of people to fantasy as well that maybe hadn't really experienced it on that level.
My mother's an example. Why is my mother watching Game of Thrones? Why is she calling me going, talking about the most violent and episode with nudity and all this stuff? Like, she's like, did you see that episode? I'm like, are you really? She got super into the Game of Thrones.
That's awesome.
And that's, you're right, the disappointment of the ending. We don't need to go there. But
yeah, I mean, it is what it is, but it doesn't diminish the fact that it brought a lot of people into the realm of fantasy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always think of Lord of the Rings, and I know you're a huge Lord of the Rings fan. My God. One of the things that I will always remember about you is one of the first times we met properly, and you were giving me a lift somewhere, and you had the Lord of the Rings audiobook,
right?
I think, playing in your car. And so I get into this car, and the first thing I hear is like Gimli just spouting off some dwarven goodness there.
Yeah.
And I totally feel
give
you.
Give me your name, Horsemaster, and I shall give you mine.
And that is such a huge part of my life. I love it. My wife loves it. We watch those movies at least once a year, usually twice. But for a lot of people, they have not seen those movies. They're pushing 20 odd years
That's
old
crazy.
Soon.
I can't believe that.
That's and crazy. While they're incredible films, yeah, this is getting to the point where there's a lot of people that just haven't grown up with a lot of fantasy properties, and especially well done ones. And with Game of Thrones and with this kind of resurgence of the general popularity of fantasy, I think that really helped propel the game. And I think that's helped propel the Warhammer fantasy community as kind of dominoes falling together, right?
Man, fantasy is the like, you can't have sci-fi without fantasy. It just, Lord of the Rings saved me. Because I'm just going to mention real quick, the Star Wars movies, The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, they came out around the same time as Lord of the Rings. And Star Wars was my fantasy thing. Like, that was, Star Wars was my biggest influence until, it still is in some way, but until fantasy hit me in Warhammer. And then Lord of the Rings came out. I was so disappointed in the Star Wars movies. I remember saying to my friends, thank God for these movies. You know, because I was just so disappointed in the Star Wars at the time. So yeah, fantasy all the way.
And bringing us back to Total War, those three groups, I think, are our main focal point for who's playing and who's loving this game. And that's just my own personal speculation, but I would think it's,
I like it.
It's those kind of three. And the more people that get introduced to the Warhammer world and all of its weirdness and all of its oddities, I think only proves that this is a property that is just so rich and so wonderful. And
yeah, took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. You never really get over the whole way that the end times went down, but man, Games Workshop throwing out the golden goose because they messed up in both marketing and implementing the game for so many years.
Yeah.
You know, it's the meme of the kid riding the bike and then he puts a stick in his own front tire.
Yep. Yeah. That's the that was their CEO at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was unfortunate. However, where there is death, there is also life. And we've got the old world to be excited about. We don't know much about it yet, but we've got that to look forward to. And we've got Warhammer Total War 3, which we will speculate on shortly as well. Everything that goes comes round again, even square.
I love it.
I really quote that, Games Workshop's ad.
Exactly. That was, to me, that's brilliant. You want to strike the heart at a veteran player? Just do that. The old world looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. I am very, very excited. And if you're a new listener, we have a episode all about the old world and our speculation for what's coming on that. And you can listen to that one as well. Now, let's dive into the game itself. We've been playing it, I think we've probably got it about the same time. I think we both waited till around the same Steam sale to grab that.
$20. How can you beat it, right?
No, you can't. Especially since I did some fun Warhammer Total War math earlier.
Right.
Because I wanted to know just how expensive would this game be
to buy
if you were going to pay the retail price for the game and all of its DLC.
My guess was close. Remember
your guess was almost right on the money. It was really good. I think within $25,
$30 off. But yeah.
So if you would like to buy both Warhammer Total War and Total War 2, you will be paying a $353.32 Canadian. So if you have a real currency, that's going to be a little less, but it's still an impressive amount. And the first Warhammer game comes in at $161.92. The second comes in at $191.40. So these are not cheap games if you want the entire experience. However, you don't really need all the DLC. I have about a third of the DLC, and I have a ton of fun with this game. I don't know of anyone who would ever buy these games not on sale. If you have that kind of money to burn, you should be on our Patreon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah, we'll give you all the Total War info.
Let's dive in here and talk about our favorite and least favorite aspects of the game. Kind of set the stage for folks here.
Let's start talking about what we don't like about the game, because there's less of that, right?
That's a good point.
For me, being a big fan, Vampire Counts, one of my favorite factions, my very first faction. Definitely my favorite tabletop faction. Disappointed in the skin for Vlad von Karstein. Some of the voices aren't the greatest. Manfred, I can buy a little bit more because, you know, he was a long time in a swamp. I don't know. Still not like the regal, handsome-looking vampires that we kind of read about. If a non-lore person were to start reading about Vlad, it would explain how dashing he is and transfixing he is. And where is that gone? where you know, Creative Assembly took the image that GW drew from him, I believe. So, I mean, I don't blame him for that. But because it's funny that their lore, they're so good. Most of everything, and I will get into the good parts of it, but yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Vlad is really a special kind of ugly in this game, and he stands apart even from the generic vampires that you will hire or recruit.
Those guys look cool.
Yeah they're fine. Yeah, they're fine. Yeah, it's just
the blood dragon looking ones.
It's just Vlad that put his face in an industrial shredder. I don't know what happened there. It's terrible. Man. Isabella is much better. The female vampires tend to be better. Manfred is still ugly, but he doesn't really hold a candle to poor old Vlad. And it's a bit of a crime. This is my problem. And I know we've mentioned this on the show a couple of times, but it bears repeating that if we get Vlad and Isabella in the old world coming up, they better look the part.
There will be.
Because I'll riot. I'll just do a one-man riot. Nope. I will find you.
I'm with you. I'm with you, too.
Some of the voice acting is a little suspect at times. It tends to be minor stuff. I've got a couple of issues. The first one is relatively minor, and that is just I don't like the horde mechanic. I just feel like it doesn't give you enough to do during the game. I think it's also a fact of, in strategy games like this, I'm more of a builder. I like to build up empires and things, playing Civilization and playing this game. I love seeing the cities grow and that kind of thing. And playing a horde army like Chaos, you know, you just wreck stuff and then move on and wreck other stuff. And that doesn't really appeal to me. I just wish there was a little bit more to their faction, like maybe in territories that you've raised to the ground, you can build dark fortresses and spread, you know, your corruption throughout the neighboring provinces. Or
it's represented on the map, but it doesn't do anything other than look like you've been there, like the taint is there. But yeah,
that's
you're right.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
It works good for me. The Beastmen were the first faction I actually played. So I didn't know, like, that's the first faction. I just saw an article yesterday about Beastmen, the least popular faction. And my experience is really good with them because when I play any game, I try to get into character. And Total War does a really good job of giving you that. Like, so I'm thinking, okay, what do Beastmen do? They just go around and destroy stuff and take over and maim and pillage and all that stuff. And that's exactly what they do. And I did start another campaign with them, just because I enjoyed the first one and I just chose a different character. I think I chose the, who's the caster? Morgul or something?
Morgor?
Morgor, yeah. So, you know, just anyway, I really enjoyed it. I understand I started a Chaos one too. The Chaos are definitely more boring. I don't hate it as much as you do, but definitely lacking. If you're going to play for the first time, I would recommend pretty much any other race than Chaos to start. Maybe even like the Marauder one, the Wolfric. I don't know if he plays any different. Probably not.
Oh, the Norskins?
The Norskins, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they at least have territories and they can build structures. Right. And, you know, there's a little bit more to them. Yeah. I think they play more like a typical race.
And yeah, if you're playing Archaon, it's not as fun.
Yeah, yeah. I just find all of those guys are very one-dimensional. But, I mean, that is entirely subjective. Your mileage may vary on that. Maybe you love just smashing the kingdoms of the old world to pieces. I traditionally play the bad guys in Warhammer and Warhammer 40K, so I get you. I do get you.
Yeah.
The other issue that I have is a little bit more serious, and it's not something that I noticed as much with Total War Warhammer 2, because I don't think they pulled the same stunt. But when Total War Warhammer was released, Creative Assembly had some day one DLC, and I don't like day one DLC because I feel like if it's ready on day one, it should have been part of the game. But this wasn't just any lord or little upgrade DLC. This was the entire Chaos Warriors faction, which is a very important faction in the game. As much as I may not like playing them, I'm sure a whole lot of people do. And having them do that, and I know it was free if you pre-ordered the game or if you had bought, I think there was some kind of collector's edition or something that came with it, but locking something immediately behind the paywall on the very first day isn't what I would consider consumer friendly at all. And I know the video games industry is notoriously bad for this, at least the AAA developers, not talking about the little indie stuff.
Electronic Arts is the worst.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're legendary at this point, right? Yeah, for the things that they pull. I'm glad the game doesn't have loot boxes, so that's nice. And This speaks to my problem not only with Creative Assembly, but also Games Workshop. I think that a lot of their decisions are very anti-consumer, which is why I try to get my miniatures secondhand when I can. And mostly the miniatures that interest me have been out of print for decades. But let's ignore that for a second so that I can make my argument about not supporting anti-consumer practices. That was a bit of a poison pill for me, honestly. I saw that and it made me instantly less interested in the game because I figured that this was going to be another one of those AAA titles where everything is paywalled, and I don't play a lot of games to start with, and paying a lot for that game right off the bat and then not even getting what I would consider the full product, it really made me not want to pick it up. And so I, you know, I didn't for a couple of years until
you and I both didn't.
And by that point, Total War 2 is out and everything. And I love the games, but I probably would have bought them sooner as well if they hadn't done this. And that still kind of bothers me. And to be fair to Creative Assembly now, because they have created a very good game and they do a lot of downloadable content that is 100% free. There's lords and updates and all sorts of things that you can get. It's about twice the list of the paid DLC. Of course, the paid DLC is big stuff, but I don't mind paid DLC during the life of the game if it adds real value. Yep. And if it keeps the game going and keeps it fresh, that's not a problem. It was just that day one and it really bugged me, really soured me on it.
I love logging onto that game after a little bit and seeing an update. I was literally thinking about the month before this trailer was like, I really wish I could play my, you know, Daemons of Chaos, because I was painting my Daemons of Slaanesh. And it was crazy a month later. And that trailer came out and my jaw like hit the... your point to the DLC, I don't adhere to that. I'm going to be honest. I did buy it for $20 off Steam. And I'm going to shout out to my buddy Cameron, who bought me Total War 2. So I didn't actually spend...
Oh, good guy.
And we played a little bit of the campaign together. And I felt really bad because my computer's so slow. So we have to wait. I could literally paint while I'm playing, waiting for the download. So it's like, it's an adventure when I play the game. And to be fair, all of the negative things we said are basically moot. There's not even after playing it and getting into it, that immediately goes away.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good. It's probably like, it's definitely my top five of favorite games of all time.
Mine as well. And when I'm talking about my issue with the game, it was one thing that they did 4 years ago, and I haven't seen them do it since. So, we could even chalk that down to lesson learned, because I know there was a little bit of pushback. I wasn't the only one that really hated that. But things that we love. I love the narrative aspects of this game. Creative Assembly have made an old world that feels like the old world. And I know that might sound a little obvious, but it's not when you think about just the moving parts that go into this thing.
Right.
And that the races feel like they should. I love the fact that sometimes the most interesting thing about this game is just watching what all of the AIs are doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the deals they make, the wars they fight. One of my favorite things is always trying to figure out who has the Sword of Cain at any one time. Because the AI is terrible for that. As soon as anyone gets it, they're just like, I'm going to pull this thing. There is no second thought, right? With the AI, they're just like, I need this sweet sword. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, imagine the sword and the stone, yet anyone can pull it out. And instead of it being holy, it kills everything, even yourself. Like,
don't use the Sword of Cain.
Yeah.
It's a bad idea. Everything about this game seems to have been crafted from a place of real love. From people who, if they didn't know the lore and appreciate the lore originally, clearly do now. And some of the characters that we have seen introduced to this game are characters that I never would have thought we would ever see in any video game, let alone, you know, the Warhammer video game, the definitive one. The fact that I can send Malus Darkblade up against Altharion and just have that fight, you know, have all of these crazy duels between these characters from Warhammer history is so much fun. I love to see them interact when you're in the diplomacy screen. They've all got a lot of shade that they throw at each other. It's so much fun. Yeah. And Creative Assembly has walked the line between the grimness of the Warhammer world and the inherent silliness of the Warhammer world.
Yes.
And even Games Workshop hasn't always done that very well. So huge, huge shout out to them for creating this beautiful little slice of this world that, honestly, if I could, I would just live in.
Yeah, it's got that feeling. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. You nailed it. It's hard to pick a favorite faction when you played a bunch of them. What would you say is your favorite?
My favorite is the Vampire Counts. And right. Mostly because they're all big personalities. That you start true. In Sylvania, which is a great place to start if you just love keeping an eye on everything, which I really do.
It's true. Yeah.
I am really bad for just sending my heroes off to far off lands just to see what's happening in those far off lands.
I did that the first time. My first run through was with the Vampire Counts. And I sent, was it a necromancer or whatever? Way off the way off. And I had no idea what I was doing, but it was fun.
Yeah. And I love a lot of the various mechanics for the Vampire Counts as well in this game. I think they've got a lot of really cool stuff that is just fun to mess around with. The various summoning mechanics, the way that you heal them as opposed to healing other ones. And one of the funnest things that I've discovered is playing Isabella von Karstein. She is my favorite character to play in the game.
Yeah.
And the reason why is that she has so many options for getting more vampires.
I played as Manfred. Okay. I'll have to try her.
Yeah. You can get this basically party posse of vampire heroes and just run, you know, you kind of run them 300 style where you don't have a whole lot of like supporting units, but you just have these vampires that are these armies of one and they just fight everything. It's really silly. It's really fun.
Nathan, I might be playing this game tonight.
Lovely. That's so fantastic. She's my favorite. Close second goes to my boy Mazdamundi, who is just a real troll lord.
And, he's a pain in the butt.
He's so much fun. He's so good.
God, he's a pain in the butt. I've been trying to dominate the world with Dark Elves because I'd like to play in character. And even, you know, sure, I have these goals to win the game, but I'm actually trying to dominate the world.
I mean, that was their stated intention in the Dark Elf army book. So
Mazdamundi comes out of nowhere, destroys some of my armies, and then disappears. So I can't fight him. It's like, oh, and then when I do fight him, he sends this ray of light through my army, central units, and just decimates them. Oh man, he's such a pain.
He is. He really is. And he can get some incredible spells. The lizard men are really spoiled for spells, I find, in Total War. They're a fun faction to play. I think they all have their merits for sure. And one of the things that I love that you had mentioned last time was, and I don't have the Wood Elf DLC, but you do, is the different victory conditions for some of the different races. And I think the Wood Elf one might be my favorite. And it's tempting me next time that they go on sale to pick this up just so I can try it. Tell us about that one.
So it was hard for me to choose because I'm a huge Undead fan. But for playing the campaign, the Wood Elves are my favorite. They have, of course, they're protecting the Oak of Ages, which is in Athelorn. To win their campaign, you need to have the Oak of Ages blossomed, fully bloomed, and then you win. And in order to do that, it's actually quite complicated. If you don't know, I didn't know the first time how exactly it would work. And along the way, the Skaven have been the most pain for me. But playing as the Wood Elves, you need to collect amber. So this is a whole different thing than another faction. Let's go over to the High Elves. Totally different. Let's go to the Dark Elves. Totally different. But collecting the amber, in order to collect amber, you need to like build fortifications and strongholds onto certain aspects, guard them. What kind of garrison are you leaving there? Don't spread your forces too thin. It is a very challenging game. Wood Elves are my favorite, I think, because of the tactics and the speed they have. I'm really, really addicted to the lore of life in this game. You send a tree lord or tree man in to crash in a unit, and watching his life go down, and then you just pop a regen on him or a life bloom, and it's just, it feels so like the game, like the tabletop game is how you'd imagine it. I sound like a gibbering idiot when I talk to Jesse sometimes. I'm like, man, this this Total War game has every, like, it has that flavor that, it has the flavor that not even, like you said, Games Workshop could show you in lore or on the tabletop game. There's extra stuff in there that, what did I say before? You're surprised. So you have this idea, you know, you go into the game, you know, it's Warhammer, you know, you and I are Warhammer fans. We have this idea of what to expect, but when something like something that we've known for 20 plus years still surprises you, then you go to Creative Assembly and go, ah, that's genius, guys. That's genius. And something as simple as I'm playing the High Elf faction with my partner. She loves High Elves. And early on, you want to, say, hire a new lord or hero. And down the line, it says, it gives a title to each lord or hero. And early on, their titles are actually quite bad. So one of the titles is Pigeon-Chested. And instead of this lord getting a bonus to your army, it's actually a negative. And that's the only faction that does that. Because it's the court of intrigue of elves. Elves are always sticking their chest out and saying they're the best when they actually are actually quite awful. It's they're a bunch of pretty boys and pretty ladies and privileged elves.
It's so cool that they've taken these ideas that didn't even come necessarily from the last incarnation of Warhammer Fantasy, but like you're saying, the court of intrigue, the way that high elves in, I believe it was 6th edition,
oh yeah,
had to pick their general. It wasn't necessarily who you wanted to be the general. It was who was the best at maneuvering in court.
Exactly.
And so you could have a general that was like a level 1 mage or something, and you're just like, oh no, this is terrible for me.
They're going back in time and doing the research.
Yeah, it really does feel like a game that was created by people who love the game, and that is, it's more than I would have ever expected.
It really is. When you go to another faction, you move on and play another faction, you can get an idea, like, okay, I'm going to Dark Elves, so they probably have, you know, slaves and da-da-da-da. Yes, they do, but how does that work? Well, get ready, because it's challenging to figure that out at first. You can do some reading and research and stuff, but it's worth mentioning, though, the dwarves, man, they can create their own armor and runes, put runes on stuff, and there's a whole thing there in that it doesn't even feel like any other faction, which it shouldn't. It's
just, yeah.
It's really, really well done.
The uniqueness to each of the factions is something that is so laudable. It's not what I expected, right? What I expected was a bunch of armies that played differently, but I figured that the overall campaign map and the way that you would build your civilizations and do everything like that would be pretty much cookie cutter. And I couldn't have been more wrong about that. They decided to make everything to the lore and very unique. And they've created their own interesting tidbits of lore as well in this that are just every bit as fun as what we've seen from Games Workshop.
There's a good food analogy I'll use for it. It's spice is good, but it's all about flavor, no matter what. And that game has a lot of flavor and spice. It's got both. But the flavor is the important part. This is it right here. This is the perfect quote. My partner, Gina, goes, this is the third month into, like, or halfway through the first 3 months of the opening of the pandemic. I got really into Total War. I think you should stop playing that game. My answer? No. That's I was so into that game. I still am, but that was like, I played the most at the beginning of the pandemic I've ever played. So many hours.
Yeah, it was a good time to have your hands on it, certainly, right?
Oh, for sure.
Well, why don't we move on here and talk a little bit about what we might see coming up in Total War Warhammer 3.
Demons.
Demons. Yeah, let's start off our speculation on the forces. We know Kislev is going to be a thing, and we know our demons are going to be a thing. We've seen these. We got a teaser for Cathay, but that leaves us some room to play with. And I do believe that we will see no less than 4 factions upon release. I don't think they would do just 3. That's a little bit weird and lopsided. And I believe we'll get probably 5 or 6 by the time all of the DLC is out and everything like that.
The whole demon thing. So me, a month ago, painting my Slanesh army. I wish I could play... I'd play Total War right now because I want a fresh thing of demons. But that's what I really wanted. But I'm actually more excited about Kislev. Just, that's crazy. Like, who was expecting that?
Yeah, I mean, that trailer. Oh boy. I think almost everyone is excited about Kislev after that. They did a really good job of portraying Serena Katarin. They did a really good job of portraying, like, the various Kislev warriors. Yeah, it was something else to see, and very unique as well. Like, demons we expected, and I think that familiarity with demons is, you know, it makes them very cool, and they're a known quantity. And Kislev, we've only ever had very few units in the game, and only for very short periods of time. During the Hero Hammer era, there was 3. There was the Kislevite horse archers, the winged lancers, and Serena Katarin. That was basically what you had to go with. In 6th edition, we got a sweet little ally mini army book for them. But even then, they only got about 3 more units on top of that. And another special character, Tsar Boris, who I'm going to be absolutely heartbroken in that he is not in this game. And if you don't know Tsar Boris, he is Serena Katarin's father. He rode an incredible war bear, and he was an absolute beast of a man. Unfortunately, he dies, and Katarin takes the throne. So if she's in the game as the Serena, he can't really be in the game. Which is, it's a crying shame, because he's an incredible model, an incredible character. I think what's most exciting about Kislev is we've seen these concept art pictures from Warhammer the Old World. So we know that Kislev is coming back whenever that game releases, and we know that they're getting a bunch of new units. We saw the Serena's female bodyguard in the trailer as well as in those previews. So not only can we get excited about the units that will be added to Kislev, we're probably going to get some kind of bear cavalry that will be super cool, but we're also kind of getting another sneak peek at Warhammer the Old World, because I'm certain that Creative Assembly went to Games Workshop and said, hey, we want to add these things to the game. What are you guys cooking up? You know, what units are in the fluff and not used? And there is so much room to expand this faction and make it something truly unique, truly special. What I want to see from Kislev is them lean hard into the ice magics.
Do you know the name? Is it just ice magics?
I believe it's the lore of ice, honestly. Okay. I think that's it.
It's something simple. Yeah, I was just curious because, you know, the names of all, you know, lore of fire and metal.
Yeah.
I was wondering if they kept it simple. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'd love to see a human race in Warhammer Fantasy that leans heavily into the magic aspects of it.
Yeah.
Because you have the Empire, which leans more to the technological side of things. And you have Bretonnia, which is kind of chivalry. And they do, of course, both of these races have a lot of magic involved in them.
Yep.
But Kislev, it's ruled by this incredibly powerful spellcaster.
And
Kislev itself is...
Where did she learn these powers?
Her powers seem to be hereditary.
Right. I was hoping that.
Yeah. Kislev, it's a very young nation compared to the other human nations in the old world.
And they are, like, closer to the Chaos world.
Yeah. And they're made up of 2 people, the Gospodars and the Ungols.
Mm-hmm.
The Gospodars are the dominant culture. They migrated from the other side of the World's Edge Mountains in around the year 1500 in the Imperial calendar. When they did so, they were led by the very first Khan queen. And her name was Miska, and she was a powerful ice mage. And she was kind of the first of her line.
Right.
And when she died, she had a daughter who she passed on her empire to, that when she had conquered Kislev. And the ice witches of Kislev, it's not just Katarin, like she's not the only practitioner of ice magic. They are all of Gospodar descent. And so it seems to be a hereditary thing. And the powers of ice magic actually come from the spirits of the land of Kislev itself. So the people of Kislev are very much tied to their wintry land. Hmm. And I would love to see them really lean into this and give us a very magic heavy themed human nation, and maybe give us some of these sweet ice spirits of Kislev. I would love to see that, or have them as spells, you know, where they can be summoned or something like that. Would be
a nice elemental.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning polar bears. Like, take all the monsters in the Warhammer world we know, and then we put in something that we have in our own world, and it's still scary.
It's still terrifying.
Like a polar bear is no joke, right?
No. And if 6th edition Warhammer Fantasy is to be believed, we'll hit you at strength 6 with 4 attacks. So yep. You're probably not getting up after that. It's one that I am tremendously excited about. I got so excited, and I do this all the time when I do these episodes because I'm a huge nerd, as I've said before. But I was just like, how could I do an allied Kislev contingent in Warhammer Fantasy on the cheap? So I was looking around at various historical miniatures, because if you're not aware, the famous Kislev winged lancers are just the Polish winged hussars from history.
Right.
They look almost entirely identical, and they look so cool. And so I understand why Games Workshop copied the idea. Yeah, I was looking around at those and just being like, how could I do this?
Most of their copied ideas look sick. Mm-hmm. They look awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they had good taste when they were copying stuff. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, we've got Kislev here. We've got our demons. And you had a really interesting idea about the demons that you might choose when you play the demon faction, one of the greater demons of chaos of the four gods. And then you might be limited to demons of that god, which would be a really interesting way to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't something that I had thought about before.
Maybe you unlock the others, or maybe you just stick with your mono faction.
Yeah,
or,
I could see it going either way. And I could see doing the mono faction thing if they really wanted to fill out that space in the north. You could have the demons there. And it would give you someone to fight in the early game as well, right? Instead of immediately marching on the regular Warhammer world, maybe you build up and knock out a couple of the other gods. And
I'm kind of hoping that does, because I like playing mono if you have the choice, right?
Mm.
But maybe that's part of me. You know, I heard a few rumors that was, I don't know if that was someone else's speculation or wish, but yeah, I would really like to be able to go like, cool, I'm, because I followed Slaanesh only usually. Like, I don't think I've played any other marks in my day. So yeah, if I could play a mono demon god, and then remember we were talking about, because in the lore now, or in the actual model range, we have a greater demon named now. We have Shalaxy Hellbane. So now, and we have the Nurgle, was it Rotgut?
Rodigus, yes.
Rodigus. We have Karos Fateweaver. And then we have the Scarbrand. So we have all four. That'd be cool to see those legendaries in there.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because when you suggested that the first time, it just blew my mind that you could get Rodigus and Shalaxy into the Warhammer world retroactively.
Yeah.
As they came out well after the switch to Age of Sigmar. And I think that's a really cool idea.
You know, one of the first things I read about Warhammer ever was the Kislevites, and the problem, you know, they have a hard life, man. Yeah. They have a hard life. And that very, very important battle where they eventually did lose, but they took out so many chaos warriors and demons that it weakened them enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The attrition thing, I think, is a great mechanic that they could use. Demons, very famously in Warhammer Fantasy, they can't maintain their physical form on the Warhammer world unless the winds of magic are blowing very, very strongly, or there is some kind of ritual or violence or other kind of... They need that energy, right? That energy of emotion to keep them there.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, so a lot of the mechanics could be around managing that and keeping your forces from losing to attrition, you know, having to be on the offensive when you're farther south just to keep your armies alive. I think it'd be really, really interesting.
Man, I just realized the 8th edition army book, because they do, you know, they do take some stuff from 8th edition. Do you remember the demon you roll on a chart every Winds of Magic phase? And
oh my god, yes.
Did you ever see that? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you roll a 2d6 for your magic, and then you also consult the chart. I wonder how they would represent that.
It could just be a random mechanic, right? Where you,
yeah,
every few turns, something good or bad happens for you.
If I'm playing Slaanesh, Khorne is my nemesis, so it'd be like some kind of... I'd be thwarted by Khorne or...
Yeah, Khorne could throw some brass skulls at you and maybe damage a few units in your army or something. Yark. At the start of battle. Those random tables, I think the Eye of the Gods table, those were my entire career playing Warhammer during like the age from like 2010 to like 2016 or 17, whenever it was that before 8th edition 40K came out.
I'm laughing and because of, oh my Jesse god, and I.
Yeah, there, yeah, man, I had some games where I lost like 3 characters on the first turn because I made Nurgle angry and he just like straight up smited a bunch of my Tzeentch sorcerers. And I was just like, thanks, Nurgle. This army isn't hard enough to play because it's completely randomized.
It's completely random, yeah.
In the early days too, where you had to deep strike your whole army and you couldn't choose what came on when. And oh,
that's terrible.
It was so hard. The mechanics for demons were so bad. First started separating them out from Chaos Space Marines in 40K, oh, they were bad.
I just remembered, so Jesse and I had a 5,000 point game recently, and my Chaos, when I my champions or characters won a challenge, you roll in the gods, I rolled +1 ballistic skill twice.
Oh no.
That does nothing. Oh my god,
that's not even
so
worth
funny.
Keeping track of. Yeah. Chaos gets some fun mechanics over the history of this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the demons are looking very cool. We've got a lot of super cool ways that demons could go.
Yeah.
Cathay is almost an entire unknown at this point, because Cathay is a very old part of the Warhammer world. It has existed since the Old Hammer era. And Games Workshop, for better or for worse, when they were populating the old world in the early days, now I'm talking about late 80s, very early 90s here, they had a lot of map and not always a lot of things to put on that map. And so some places they just lifted straight out of history.
Our world, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Cathay is, for all intents and purposes, think of Imperial China. You know, it has a great wall. It has that culture. It has that feel to it. And it
somehow feels right, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing to think of. And there's a lot of different ways that you could go with Cathay. I've seen people do kind of elemental themes with it before when people made their own armies, and some really cool kind of things there. And you could go back to those old school army lists if you wanted some inspiration. Right. But I almost feel like Cathay might be Creative Assembly's baby for this one, right? I almost feel like when the Vampire Coast came out, they added a ton of things that we have never seen in Warhammer Fantasy.
Good point.
But they're all really kind of cool, right? I love the deck gunners. The guys that are held aloft by giant bats, and they've got like these little like hand cannon things, and they just do pot shots at you.
Yeah.
There's some really neat things there. I think Cathay is going to be along that line. I think we're going to see, I think it's going to be very thematic. I wouldn't be surprised if we got some kind of Eastern style dragon-esque thing. Like, you know, the very serpentine kind of.
Oh, I hope so.
Eastern dragons. Those things are so cool, man. I want some of those in Total War. Absolutely. What is going to be really interesting to see is how they connect Cathay to the rest of the Warhammer world, because we've got a lot of geography right now that is not covered on that Mortal Empires map.
Man, there's a lot of... like the Cathay region is pretty damn big.
It's massive. It's huge. The size of the old world, at least.
And yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I think a couple of things happen. Firstly, I don't think we get all of Cathay. I think we get a subset of Cathay. And there's a couple of ways that I could see this going, depending on how they want to build out their map of the Warhammer world. Because we know there's going to be some kind of Mortal Empires mode where you can just play as everybody. For the first many, many months I owned the game, that was the only way I played, was those huge maps. I only more recently started getting into doing the Vortex campaigns, which are actually a lot of fun. But there's a couple of ways that I could see this going down. The first way, and I think it might be my preferred method here, is kind of a contiguous map of the old world. And that bleeds into... So instead of stopping at the World's Edge Mountains, or just over the World's Edge Mountains, we do the Darklands, the Mountains of Morn, and get into Cathay there. The trouble with this, of course, is it makes a huge map.
Right.
So I think what you do is you abridge the Darklands a bit, because the Darklands have a whole lot of space and not really a whole lot going on other than the Chaos Dwarves and Goblin tribes and things that inhabit the area. And we'll get to the Chaos Dwarves in a bit, but I think you kind of squish that down. You have the Mountains of Morn, and then you have Cathay, and then you do kind of the northern section of Cathay. And then you have the Great Wall, and then you have kind of the wastes above that, and maybe you and get some chaos stuff there.
Where is Ind on the western side?
So Ind is kind of south of the Mountains of Morn and south,
right,
southwest of Cathay. Think of where India is in comparison to China, and you'll you'll have where Ind is. And the right. Kingdoms of Ind would be another one that's super neat. They're, I think, very unlikely to happen. And that's because as little attention as Cathay has gotten from Games Workshop, Ind has gotten basically none. Other than being like a name
just play
on
the map.
Yeah.
Like they just be on the map, right?
Yeah. And so I think that would be my most likely scenario. And I think a scenario that would work pretty well. And if you have that scenario, it gives you room to add in a couple more races as well. Because you don't want the Darklands just inhabited by orcs and goblins and the stuff that you've already got going on there. And that's why I think the Chaos Dwarfs become a huge option there. And remember, too, when we're thinking of Total War 3, I'm thinking of it as an addendum to Total War 1 and 2. But this has to be a standalone game as well, with a standalone map. And if we're doing a standalone map, what we really want to see is just those northern territories, right? So if you were thinking like a modern day map of the world, you'd be looking at like Finland to the eastern edge of Russia, right? It'd be that kind of almost Arctic circle zone
or something.
And if you were doing that, the races that you could really easily fit in there would be the legions of chaos and demons, the Kislevites, who we already know are there, Cathay. For sure, Cathay's northern border would be a perfect one for that. And then either Chaos Dwarfs or Ogres.
Yeah, I would go with Ogres.
And I do think we'll see Ogres first, 100%.
Ogres would be fantastic.
And there's very little work that needs to be done with Ogres. They had a good-sized range. They had tons of special characters for legendary lords. And they'd bring a new and interesting play style to the game that we haven't seen yet, where they're all monstrous infantry and monstrous cavalry and just monsters.
Demons have a new would have a new play style. Ogres would have a new play style.
Mm-hmm.
Kislev, this is a whole new game for sure.
Yeah,
I get it now.
I am willing to bet that we will see Chaos Dwarfs. I think though that they will be a expansion, like a DLC,
right?
That will come later on. If I had to put money on it, I would put money on Cathay, Ogres, Kislev, and Demons. And man, that's going to be cool. Think about the possibilities of that. You've got Cathay, which is going to be a whole new thing. You have Ogres and Demons, which are going to almost complete all of the Warhammer races that we saw on the tabletop. And then you have Kislev, which has always been this footnote and always had, you know, just enough units to make them an interesting thing, but not enough that you ever saw them on the table. And they're going to get entirely fleshed out, and they're going to be this great preview for Warhammer the Old World.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah, this game is going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited just to learn you know, let alone even play it, just to learn. I think it's going to tell us a lot of things about the future, maybe. One thing that I do want to caution, though, and I've heard this a lot online, a lot of rumors going on here, and if you will give me a moment to play the spoiler here and the guy who rains on everyone's parade, I would not expect to see Cathay as a faction in Warhammer the Old World. Mm-hmm. From everything we've seen about this game, it just doesn't make sense. Games Workshop is focusing on a very specified geographic region here.
Yeah, it's very tight.
And I honestly don't even expect to see things like Lizardmen, Tomb Kings, Ogres.
Agreed. Yeah.
In this game, at least as factions. Who knows what we might get as mercenaries? Maybe we'll get some sweet Cathayan mercenaries in the Old World. But I think if you're thinking that Games Workshop is taking cues from this for their own game, you're in for some disappointment. I think this game is not going to extend, at least at launch, and for probably many years after, past the borders of the map that you see them filling in and their little
sneak
previews. We're
going to see Civil Wars, right?
Yeah. Civil Wars is a huge theme with this. You have several nations here. The Empire, this is the time of three emperors. This is a really good time to be a rebel in the Old World. You have Britonia. They could possibly have the Affair of the False Grail go on in this timeline. There's so many possibilities for intercene conflict between these nations that I would expect them to choose a few factions from Warhammer Fantasy and delve deeper into them rather than cast a wider net. Don't expect to see a lot of the things that we saw in Warhammer Fantasy. This is going to be a very different experience. And as far as Cathay is concerned, it's so far off this map. I just don't see it. Maybe if Cathay proves to be a really popular choice and super fun in Total War Warhammer, maybe we see a couple of those units ported over and they become mercenaries or something for hire. I could see that. But as far as you being able to build the Grand Army of Cathay in Warhammer the Old World, just don't get your hopes up, is all I'm saying.
I agree.
Yeah, and that concludes the Debbie Downer section of this podcast. I'll try not to make it a reoccurring segment.
No, it's not a Debbie Downer. That's just, to me, that spells so much potential for GW sculpts. And as we said before, we can have men and women equally represented in these factions. Do you know what I mean? I think that would be
their
answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Look for that. I would think in Cathay, look for that in Kislev as well. Kislev culture, and I've had to do a lot of reading recently about Kislev culture. Women and men both really pull their weight in the military of Kislev. Everyone has to. It's bad up there. I mean, we've already seen the female guards. Expect to see female troops just in the regular units as well.
Yeah.
100%. And I'm sure that will likely be represented in Total War Warhammer 3 as well, especially if they're taking design cues from the upcoming Old World stuff. 100%. Yeah. The other possibility that I saw, so I mentioned the map that I like, that's kind of the contiguous map of the Old World, but like the northern reaches of it. The other map that we could see, and this is more of a Mortal Empires thing, so this is if you're throwing all of the races together, is one where they cut out the Darklands, basically. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they split the world at the Darklands. So Cathay and the Far East ends up on the western side of the New World. So you'd have the New World kind of in the middle of our map, and then you would have to the left of that, you would have Cathay and the Far East, and to the right of that, you would have the Old World. For those who didn't grow up in North America, I know we have a big audience overseas, you guys might not recognize this type of map, but they're very common in schools in North America.
People grew up elsewhere?
Yeah, no, I know. In some ways, it's like we're not the center of the world, but most of our maps are built that way. So we kind of decided to split Central Asia because we figured there wasn't anything important happening there. And we have North America in the center, mm-hmm. and Europe and Africa and part the first half of Asia on the right hand side, and on the left hand side is the other half of Asia. And it's a really weird way to do your maps, but it puts North America front and center, and you know, we like that around these parts. It is a weird thought, but I'm thinking of this massive game that you're going to have once these units come out. And this map is going to be so huge, and there's going to be so many factions on it that you kind of need a way to separate some of them and keep some of them clustered together. And yeah. I think that might be a way that they go. I do, however, still think that the contiguous map is a lot more likely.
It might be the first Total War I buy at full value. I don't know if I can wait.
As long as you don't send me pictures of you playing it, because I'm going to be so
You know I'm
jealous.
Going to.
I know you, you are. Know this I'm is why I'm to. Saying don't. This is, yeah. I've already resigned
print
my
Print screen. Yeah. Print screen. Print like.
I get a print screen for each turn.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. I get enough messages. I don't need that. That'd be fun. Yeah, there's so much potential here. And you know as well that with this game is going to come updates to the two prior games and how they work, and they're going to tweak some things. We might see some more legendary lords and characters enter the game. At this point, most of the early races and the stuff that we saw in Total War Warhammer 2 is so fleshed out.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But every time I start a new game, I look through the characters and I'm just like, wow, there's so much here. And then I realize, wow, there's so much they could still add. Oh, Warhammer yeah. is just
absolutely
lousy with fun heroes that they could add to the game. So that's another thing that you should look forward to.
I just
there.
Started one with Imric.
Yeah. Oh my God, Imric is nuts. That guy and his dragons, just dragons all the way down. I find his balance to be somewhat suspect.
Did they not fix that yet? I think, you know, they probably will update it.
They may have. It's been a long time since I ran into him. I just remember running into him and he had three dragons and I was like, it's a little early in the game for this, Imric. A little early.
Triple breath attack.
Yeah, I don't need that. I find one dragon enough of a pain.
Right. Cool.
Was there anything else that you would like to hit on for speculation for Total War Warhammer 3?
I guess the question I had was, what do you think of the hooded guy in the map smirking at the end? What's that all about?
He's a bit of an enigma. And he is in the little teasers as well. And I'm very curious to know more about him. He isn't someone that I recognize in that he looks kind of like a generic old man.
Well, he looks like a younger version of the old man that, I guess, what is he? He's like the
advisor guy.
The advisor
right?
guy. Yeah,
the guy who gives you those helpful tips, and he has a bird on his shoulder.
Stay a while and listen.
He does have a bit of Deckard Cain to him, eh?
Deckard Cain style.
And I'm going to be so disappointed if he is just that. if that's your new thing. If that's the reveal, I'm going to be so upset. I think he does have a big part to play in the plot of the upcoming game, either in the way that the mechanics work or something. I would bet good money on there being some kind of campaign like the Vortex campaign. I'm sure that there'll be some kind of very story-driven element to this, and I would think he probably plays a part in that. Mm-hmm. He seems to have some kind of medallion or necklace or something, and I don't know what that is about either. There's definitely some kind
of...
He's
got a vibe there that we don't like. We don't like the vibe.
No, the vibe
See,
is very
he
suspect.
He knows something. He
does.
He knows something we don't, and it's pissing me off.
Yeah, he's smirking about something. You had the idea that he might be a servant of chaos, and I might believe that.
I might have
to call the witch hunters.
Well, he's looking at the map.
Get a confession.
And it's on the map. You see, you know, the frost, it's like chess piece, right? And then the demon one, and then and then the Cathay one. It's like, is he manipulating these factions, or what's going on?
Yeah, it could be. I know we'll get more trailers for this game before it comes out.
Give us some more trailers.
Here's my prognostication for the next one. The next trailer that I think we're going to see is going to be the Cathayan trailer, because I don't think you tease that unless you've got a nice cinematic something or other in the works for them. And I think it's going to be Cathay and Ogres. That's going to be...
Oh,
I think there's going to be some kind of battle going on there.
You just gave me... Great. You got me even more excited. Come on, like, yeah.
I'm sorry this doesn't come out for months and months yet.
Give me the Ogre Ninja and Fire Bellies. Yeah.
Oh, the Fire Bellies could be so much fun in this game.
They would be hilarious. You just run them in and just burn everything and then, yeah, cause chaos for a bit.
I want to see with ogres, and I will say right now, ogres are going to be in this game at some point. There's no way they get left out.
They have to be. Yeah.
Even if they're not a starting race, and I think they're going to be a starting race, but even if they're DLC, they're going to be in this. And what I want to see from ogres, I want my ogres to play the way my ogres play in our Orchard Edition, which is they hit hard and they hit fast, but they're the ultimate bullies. The moment things don't go their way, they waver and they flee and they take off.
Oh, that just reminds me. We should do an orchard game with your ogre. Your ogres are awesome. They're going to look great on camera, man. They look great on camera.
Maybe that'll be my first on-camera game.
Let's do it. That would be awesome.
And they don't play that way in 8th edition because of various rules, hordes, steadfast, and things. It's way too easy to make them very stubborn. But with the 6th edition core rules that we use, it makes them a very high risk, high reward bully army that while things are going their way, they are unstoppable. But the moment someone stands up to them and gives them a bloody nose, they're just like, I don't know, guys, we might have to get out of here.
You, like, you fail the break test, run away. And of course my dwarves can't catch you, but they see the tail end of the ogres go. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, your dwarves can't catch a cold, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Because my ogres didn't even run that far.
That's because their constitution is so high.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's just that they're too good. So much to look forward to here.
Exactly.
That's what I want from the ogres. I'm very excited for them. Want to see the Chaos Dwarves there, especially if they do the 8th Ed style, which I'm sure they will. There's going to be all sorts of crazy war machines and things that we're going to see. There's like that Skull Cracker, which is like this evil train that just comes at you. I think it's the Dreadquake mortar and all sorts of fun stuff for them. Man. But they better do hobgoblins. The latest Chaos Dwarves did not have hobgoblins in 8th edition, and that makes me furious because hobgoblins are hilarious.
They are hilarious. I'm just thinking about demon magic too, like the Slaanesh magic's hysterical frenzy. They'll probably Cacophonic Choir, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. I feel like the Slaanesh magic will lean heavily into like getting units out of position and really like just messing with them so that you can set up
obviously it'll be purple hazy stuff coming at you. And
it'll be a lot of purple haze. If you're a Total War player, or if you're a Warhammer player that hasn't played Total War, if you're only on the fence about it, if you've never taken the plunge, it's in a good spot right now. They've done so much tweaking, so much revisions, and added so much to this game. You can get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
It's worth it. Buy it on sale, though.
But, I'm probably going to play it.
You'll get a lot out of it. Yeah, this is the problem, right? You get all excited about it, and then you just want to go and play.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's about time for you and I to wrap up this discussion for this week. We've only done about 6 hours on this topic now.
No worries.
With all of our sadly, dearly deceased podcasts. Yeah, Scott, I really want to thank you for doing this with me because...
Yeah, no worries.
I mean, I know we both really enjoy doing this podcast, but there's something about doing it 3 times in quick succession that it loses a little bit of magic, but each time we seem to find different things to talk about, so that is really helpful.
Third time's the charm, as they say.
Third time's the charm also might be the title of this episode.
That's true. Yeah, something like that. But yeah, this has been fun. Honestly, every time we talk, something new comes out of it. We talked about similar things the last 3 times, but we added some other stuff that just comes up in regular conversation. So it's really great.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Until next time, happy wargaming. Thanks for listening to this episode of the War Games Orchard. If you enjoy the show, why not support us on Patreon? Our Patreon is non-tiered, and for as little as $1, you can enjoy monthly bonus episodes, stories, and even more content coming soon. In this month's bonus episode, Scott and myself sit down and make 100% randomized Warhammer Fantasy roleplay characters from 1st edition. We let the dice decide literally everything about these characters, and the resulting characters will surprise you. They sure surprised us. That episode goes live this week. If Patreon's not your thing, please consider giving us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice and sharing this show with friends. You can get in contact with us by joining the Warhammer Orchard community on Facebook or by email at wargamesorchard@gmail.com.
Miami Beach.